Welcome to Live the Fuel.
Welcome to Live
Welcome
the Fuel.
To Live the Fuel. Focusing on health, business, and lifestyle. And now your host, Scott Mulvaney.
All right, good day, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to another Live the Fuel show. So tonight, I'm actually recording this in the evening, and since you guys have no clue, this is always a digital recording. You never know when I'm doing these recordings and where. So this episode is actually from the home studio. If you've been listening to the last couple episodes, I've been out and about in people's offices, out of Starbucks, you name it. I love to travel, so why not give you guys a taste of that on the road? So this evening, I'm actually having the pleasure of bringing on a young lady, a professional, financial professional, actually, and we got magically connected through her significant other, a gentleman by the name of Tony Nguyen from a few episodes ago, the basically guru of Instagram, or as he's building his profession. So it's really exciting to get connected this way because this is the power of networking. I didn't really know who she was until he's like, hey, you should reach out and talk to her. So quick background on her. If you guys find her on LinkedIn and Facebook after today, which you will thanks to my amazing show notes, this young lady has been 3 years now, her own entrepreneurship. She has her own coaching business, a lot of financial background. From my research and just from a couple of emails back and forth here, we're going to get to know each other a lot more on tonight's episode. But she's helping people basically with budgeting, helping people figure out how to pay college a little bit better with like a lot less debt, which I'm excited to share some of that because I did not learn that yet. And also just also helping people pay off debt and plan for the future and just, you know, creating some management plans. I mean, these are all things that a lot of people are struggling with, and there are a lot of financial advisors out there, but I have a feeling she does something a little bit different. I like her little tagline too, because she calls herself the girl boss at Whitney Hansen Coaching. So without further ado, let's welcome Whitney Hansen to the show.
Thank you so much, Scott. I'm so excited to be here.
Yes, and I'm excited because this is another Boise, Idaho episode.
Yeah, we're making our name.
We're going blue here, man. I mean, it's all right. I like you guys. You're all right. The potatoes are okay, but you know.
You love the potatoes. You know you do.
Yeah, I had to drop that on Tony when the last episode there because I was like, that's all people think of. Let's be honest. I don't know. Your schools are good. The sports are actually pretty good too. So.
Yeah, we have a good season this time. I think we're undefeated.
Well, if my one of my old, you and I were talking earlier in a few other episodes, people have overheard this. Like I used to do the whole wildland firefighting thing living out west. And one of my squad bosses who introduced me to CrossFit because it was like, hey, I've been studying CrossFit and this is how I'm going to be training you guys physically through fitness to help us survive as firefighters. He is a huge Boise fan. Like, oh my God, he's... If we were in the fire vehicles driving across state to another fire, like he's always playing NPR or he's playing some type of feed from, I don't know if you guys have like a college radio station or something, but he would find a way to stream that stuff. So
we sure do. Yeah, that is great.
Yeah.
Good for him.
Very passionate.
Good
man.
Guy. About Boise.
He had the shirts, he had the hats, and basically everybody else in football sucked. So
that is so funny. Yep. Yeah, we're kind of weird about that stuff here.
Yeah, I mean, it's okay. I mean, I'm a Penn Stater, so we have a weird cult too, obviously. I mean, I was like, listen, man, I got some blue and white, so I get the whole blue thing. He's like, no, we are all blue.
Get it right, man.
Yeah, very passionate, man. But I miss the guy. He's a very good professional, and I'm sure he's still out there serving a lot of us, our civilians, as far as his wildland firefighting career, because he's definitely a full-time U.S. Forest Service dedicated government employee. So.
Oh, that's great.
But let's get into you. This is the reason why we decided to bring you on as a co-host is number one, I love spontaneity. We definitely rock that. And obviously, Tony is very proud of what you do. Also, you're a fellow podcaster. I didn't even throw that in for your intro because I'm still trying to figure you out and learn who you are. And that's why I'm excited to do this on the episode. So we get to the audience and myself get to learn more about you together. But obviously, you have a podcast. And I believe you're branded yourselves the Money Nerds. Is that correct?
That's correct. Yep.
Now, is that you or is that Tony?
That's me, unfortunately.
Okay.
But it's me.
You know, if you're gonna rock the nerd in your branding, I'm guessing you're pretty good at this, right?
I mean, I'm pretty nerdy. Yeah.
Okay. So you're pretty good at being a nerd, or you're pretty good at money too?
You know, both.
Okay. All right. So you're going to help us tonight here. Hopefully, I guess we're going to join you here. We're going to geek out a little on the money stuff because, and we talked about this. I mean, obviously my show and the domains we're trying to balance here are helping people fuel their health, their business, their lifestyle. And admittedly nowadays, people forget about this, but it takes money to do all of that. I mean, if if you want to go skiing in Colorado, which I do every year, I mean, boom, that takes some cash. You want to live a healthier lifestyle. I teach people with my little side hustle nutrition gig, how do people like, listen, guys, it's all about reallocating the funds and the monies in the right way. Like you're already spending this money, but also it helps to have some budgeting if you're looking to increase your performance and nutrition to the next level, because you're going to probably invest a little bit more than you were in the past. So it helps to have money for that. And then of course, that's a whole other subject when it comes to business. So, I mean, tell us more about this. Like, how did you get into this? I mean, obviously you went to school at Boise State University, so clearly you studied finance.
I did. Yep. So I'll give you the short story and the long story. So the short story is I studied accounting in undergrad, worked in public accounting for a couple of years, actually hated it. Not my thing. Believe it or not, I like to talk to people. And so the cube life was not for me. But amen. I did pick up on a little bit of financial habits and practices and from the business perspective, but I was really kind of frustrated because they don't teach you personal finance in accounting. You would think you would learn that, but you really don't. And so for me, I graduated in 2010 with my bachelor's and I had $30,000 in student debt. And so for me, I was like, God, that's a lot of money. What am I going to do? And so I put together a plan and I paid it all off in 10 months.
Whoa.
So that's what, like, what started.
Do we have a dollar behind that? Can you share that? Like 10 months?
Yeah. $30,000 in 10 months.
Solid. Wow.
Yeah. I was hustling. That's for sure.
I mean, were you also like selling off your personal life and basically like living in a hole, or like what kind of commitment are we talking about for something like that? I mean, obviously there's had to be some serious commitment.
Yeah. Of course there always is. Anytime you get great results, there's always a lot of sacrifice behind that. So for me, I think the biggest thing was working two jobs. So I worked as a nail tech and then I worked as a public accountant.
A what tech?
And that was a nail tech, like doing toes and fingers.
Wait, hold on a second. All right. So you're a public accountant professionally, and then your side hustle, or not even hustle because it wasn't your business, I'm sure it was a side job, but you were basically doing manis and petties?
Yeah. Yeah, that was it. That was my job to get me through undergrad.
Now, I have no problem admitting I'm secure enough in my manhood that I've had a quality mani and petty. That's right, gentlemen. Okay. This is the modern era. It's okay to spoil yourself a little bit too. And let me tell you, when you get done hiking for 6 months in the woods, 16 hours a day fighting fires, your feet are jacked up. So it's awesome to get an amazing petty. So
it's so true. And so, yeah, that was my job and I didn't make great money. I think I was bringing in from the salon, probably about $25,000 a year, which doesn't sound like a ton, but for a college student, that's pretty dang good money.
No, that's very good.
I was doing okay. I was doing all right. And so between that and then the public accounting job, all of my accounting income went directly towards debt. So
okay,
I already knew I could
live
on
that. You chose to
live
off of the nails and use the accounting to pay off the debt.
That's exactly right. Yep. So everything that I had went towards debt. And it goes down so quickly when you're doing that.
That's a serious commitment though. I mean, was the income, cause did you start off as an intern or was that a paid gig right from was that paid internship right away or actual full-time gig?
It was a seasonal gig. So during tax season, it was 40 plus hours easily. And then during the rest of the time I would go part-time. So I'd be about 30, 35.
Okay.
And so I did the two jobs for, about 2 years almost actually.
I'll tell you what, I mean, this is a whole other episode, but I've done tons of side gigs. I've been there. I mean, even when I had my corporate professional jobs, like I was always either bouncing in a bar, bartending, a bit of bar back, a bit of spinning instructor. Like I've always had side gigs. I don't know why it was that way up until literally the past couple of years when you start getting focused and doing obviously some other things you want to focus on. But I tell people, I'm like, hey, if you got the free time, why not make some cash and do something fun while you're at it?
Heck yeah, you might as well.
So let me guess. Obviously, the accounting gig was your cubicle hell. And because yes. I've never met anybody say they love cubicles. I'm sorry.
No, it's awful.
And now I know you're definitely younger than me, but please tell me you know the famous cubicle movie.
The Office?
Office Space.
Oh, the Office Space is even better when they beat up the printer.
Yes. Thank God she knows it. Okay. Awesome.
So, did you get that memo?
Yeah. Yeah. The TPS reports. Thank you very much.
Yeah, that's the best.
Wait, hold on. What was his line? If you can go ahead and take care of that, that would be great.
That'd be great. Yeah. I'm going to need you to come in on Saturday.
And then there's the swing line stapler. I mean, come on. Everybody needs a good red swing line stapler. So,
absolutely.
It's a classic. And
it is.
I've had conversations with people who never really worked in cubicles, and they've seen the movie, but it doesn't connect. It really doesn't. And obviously, that movie definitely embellishes a few things, but it's not that far off. I mean,
no, sadly, it's not.
I mean, did you have multiple bosses as well?
I had about two. So I was pretty lucky. I had a smaller accounting firm that I worked for. So it wasn't too bad, but I mean, most of that stuff was pretty spot on.
Wow. So thank God, because it is a classic. So I love using that as fuel for the fire, just to help people, like, I guess, tie it together when we talk about entrepreneurship and business and helping people kind of break away from the ties of things that they know they don't love, but obviously they're doing it because they have to. People have to pay the bills. You have to, in your case, mm-hmm. wipe out debt with that whole salary.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So, well, I mean, so what kind of commitments are we talking about? What did that take for you to, like, say, man, like, I am literally not touching that money. That money is just for this. I mean, did you, obviously you were still living kind of like that, just out of college lifestyle for that 25K mm-hmm. from the Manny's and Petties, or what are we talking about?
Yep, that's exactly it. So the first thing is to, if you're a college student and you're coming right out of college, you have a severe advantage over everybody else because you already have low standards. And so you're doing all right. Like, seriously.
Low standards.
Your standards are not very high when it comes to your quality of life. And so you can live on ramen noodles. You can live on pretty much nothing. You don't have to take those vacations because you're already used to that. So it's not that big of a deal for you. It's once you start getting higher standards in your life, or at least financially, that's where it gets to be kind of problematic. So for a college student, it's like, keep living on nothing. You're good at that. Keep doing that and you'll start to pay off debt so much faster, or build up a savings, or start that business, or whatever it is you choose to do.
Well,
so for me, that was it.
Yeah, I think that's a very valid point. I mean, it is, and we all know this as we get older, things start getting away from you, man. Like, it's a snowball effect. Things start rolling. People are making more money. They're like, oh, and there's the keeping up with the Joneses thing. People do. Yep. I was guilty of that for a little while. Like, it, next thing you know, you're making more money. So I call that the money to brains ratio. It's like, usually if you don't have a lot of brains, that extra money is not going to go to the right place. So, it's very detrimental. It hurts a lot of people, and it's not like they're doing it on purpose. I think we just lose track. And I've been a bit of a minimalist for the past few years. I can actually thank that firefighting decision, because I was in the corporate world and I had a 2,000 square foot townhouse that I was renting from a good friend of mine. I was kind of basically managing the property, so, which was smart for me for getting a discounted rent. But having that space, like, I had foosball tables and at a bar, and like, I had all the stuff, you know, I'm like, okay. Mm-hmm. So when I moved west for the 2 years, I'm like, I wasn't sure if I was going to move back. So I said, this is a great opportunity. Let's flip the switch, man. Let's go, boom, let's drop everything. So I sold or just gave everything away, and my life fit into a 1999 $3,000 Subaru Outback wagon.
Nice.
So no car payment, no car payment, wiped it out, owned that thing just for a beater car, gave everything away. The only reason why I had a wagon was because I needed the space for my gear, because I'm a rock climber and a mountain biker and a skier. So I kept all that stuff because that's my lifestyle stuff. And I'm not going to get rid of that. That's my life balance.
That's great.
But that was my life for like 2 years, just driving back and forth, coast to coast, across the country. When you get laid off a fire, come home, hang out with people. You know, I could pick up a goat at the heartbeat because my life fit in my car. and this is like at 32 and 33. Like, most, like, to your point, normally people are still at that point when you're coming out of college. And since I never got to go away to college, and I worked my way through college to try and pay for my education, I never got to experience that. So I decided to kind of revisit that in my 30s.
I love it. Why not?
But to your point, that helped me a lot. Like, I was gone firefighting, so I didn't have life expenses per se. Like, I was still paying down debt and I had bills from the corporate gig, but like, I'd be gone for a month on a fires. So it's like, your direct deposits roll in, you know, from your government paycheck, and they're just sitting there. So when I get back, I would like, okay, let's put that towards an extra credit card. I didn't really need to spend anything. I didn't have rent per se. Like, I think I paid $100 $100 a week for my barracks apartment that was on the fire base to the government. I was like, yeah, that was it. So it was, you know, and a cell phone bill. I mean, it was so awesome.
That's like the dream. It really is, because when you don't have all of those monthly expenses, your money goes so much further. It really does. And so that was exactly for me too. It's like, and you've probably been there as well, it sounds like, but when you are working your butt off for a goal, and maybe you're working two jobs, maybe three jobs, whatever it might be, you don't really have a lot of time to go spend money on crap you don't need. You're so busy. And so that's another really good advantage.
Yeah. And I think it's interesting because I have friends who are busy. Like, we are busy. But yet they still might have the toys thing. I don't know. Like, I my toys are my gear. Like, I love getting a new mountain bike or every couple of years or a new pair of skis. So yeah, it's important to work hard so you can play hard per se. But to your point, it's like, if you're still spending a ton of money and you don't have time to technically use it, like, where's it all going? Or do you just, are you on auto ship where you're just getting like this new thing? I'm sure you've seen online where people can get like clothing, like auto shipped every month, like a new outfit.
Yes.
I do not agree with that. I just see problems right there.
Yeah, it can be.
I don't know if any of your clients are struggling with that right now. I don't know.
you know, some. Yeah. Some are, yes.
But how do you battle that? I mean, I don't know, like, because that's something you can really talk about with clients, because obviously that's their personal life. I mean, I don't know, does this stuff come up? Okay.
All the time. So what I like to tell people is, for you don't really see the value in the subscription model of getting a new outfit delivered to your door. That's totally okay.
But
you
I
don't
do that
have
with my
to.
Nutrition, though.
But you know, we all have something, and that is fine. But what personal finance is about is, what the heck do you care about, and how do you spend the most money on what you truly care about, not crap you don't need. So if you value health, but you're eating out and you're spending $500 a month on eating out on junk food, that doesn't quite fit with your life values. And so it's getting those to match what you truly think you care about and making sure that you're spending heavily in those areas.
I like that. I think, and actually I can connect on this, because over the years, you know, one of my side hustles is I have I don't know if you've ever heard of the company called Isogenics, but I found that when I was firefighting, I was using the nutrition for my health, and I was like, wow, night and day, amazing, good stuff. But then they're like, oh, just so you know, it's one of those referral business models, so you could make some side cash. So like over the years, it kind of became one of my side hustles. So it's like, oh, sweet. Like, I haven't paid for my own nutrition in like 2-3 years because of the team that I've built up and the money that's coming in. It's residual income. So, and this year I've made a new commitment to, for the past few years, I made that the food fund and the fun fund, when like I was really hardcore doing it. But you know, some of the money dropped off because I'm too busy with this, the podcast and everything else. So like, I'm not really hardcore building that business. It's just kind of on autopilot. So it's like, okay, some of that dropped away. So it's like, let's still not touch that money. Like, make sure that's doing something different. So now I've committed that all the money that comes in every single week, I just make sure that sits there for food, and that's it. And then if there's extra sitting there, then I'll wait till like once or twice a year to check in on it. And then maybe I might reinvest it into the business, or I'll just leave it sit there. But I'm trying not to even mess with that anymore, because that's like, I'm trying to segment that out. Kind of like what you were talking about, like break that stuff off. I don't know if that's something you recommend or not. So
completely. Absolutely. I think you should have multiple different savings accounts. So you should have one for your emergency funds. I call this my appendix fund, because no joke, last week I had an emergency surgery to get my appendix removed.
You had mentioned that in an email.
Yeah, that was fun. So, but it was so unexpected. And so that's the last thing you want to think about when you have a medical emergency or anything bad happen. You don't want to be thinking about, how the heck am I going to pay for this? And so you should always have an emergency savings, and then build up those other stuff. Your car's not going to last forever. Start saving for that now. You might want to go on a vacation, so save up for that. And so it's just being more intentional with how you plan your financial life that I think is really important.
Well, and I'll be the first one to admit it. Like, I bragged just now about the whole firefighting lifestyle, and that lasted. I did the fire for two, then I moved to Colorado, but then I moved back to the East, and it didn't take me long, but I started accumulating bills again. So it's like, I didn't learn completely, right? So I'm not back to where I was, but I mentioned this to you in an email. I'm like, you know, I've been there. I've made those mistakes, and I can actually thank. Have you ever read the book Profit First by Michael McCallowitz?
Yes, it's a great book.
Okay, seriously, if you, for example, don't become one of their, like, they have a whole brand now, the Profit First Professionals, because what you're talking about totally clicks with what they're talking about. And I'm literally in the process of implementing that system into my business, because I was like, that's what I need to do. I need to make sure that that money gets moved into separate accounts before I can even see it or touch it, do the distributions, everything they talk about. It's like the only thing in all these years that's truly clicked to me. And I'm just wondering why. Like, I don't know if you've overheard, if you ever talked about, it sounds like you do some of the similar stuff that they do. So why do you think that's all of a sudden, you don't know me that well, but why do you think that's clicking to me? Is it because there are people wired that way where it's like, there's that instantaneous thought process? Is it, do most people succeed better if they do move the money before they can touch it? I don't know. What do you get involved with?
Yeah. So there's a couple different kinds of people out there. There's the people that no matter what they do, they don't want to think about their money. They just want it to just happen automatically. And those are the people I love working with, actually, because they don't care where they're like, I want to save, but I don't care how I save, as long as I look at my account and it's growing. And so those are the people where you can automate your savings and just never have to worry about it. Automatically pay your bills, automatically draft your savings account, so, or from your checking to your savings, so it's growing. And then there's the other people that are the pain in the butts like me. So those are the people that, yes, you can automate everything, but you like to manually push that button and say transfer. Like, you like that control. So if you're a little bit of a control freak, I get that. That's kind of the type A people out there that like to do things on their own. And if that's the type of person you are, you got to be careful of that. You really, are you the way, are you kind of that way?
Oh, I joke around some of my earlier episodes, like a couple of people that thought they knew me, I joked around because I'm like, you know, I grew up on a farm. Like, I was, you know, I was a farm boy, but I was not type A yet. And I don't know, somehow over the years, because I just didn't like my life and I was always pushing myself harder and harder and harder, I just morphed into a type A person. And so anybody who knows me now, they're like, you were never you were always a type A. I'm like, no, you have no idea. I was different. I was a shy kid. But nowadays, yeah, man, I am so type A. My girlfriend's like, you just need to dial it back a notch.
I get that.
Yeah, but I don't see that as a negative. It's just, I think the most important thing is you embrace who you are. You realize your strengths, but also your shortcomings, and don't ignore them. And that is one of my own self-work pieces that I share with others, because I'm always working on that for myself. I think that we all have our opportunities to improve ourselves and develop ourselves. That's part of that whole self-help initiative. But if you don't recognize those weaknesses along with the strengths, you're just going to keep ignoring it and kind of rolling over like it's no big deal.
Yep, exactly the case. And so for most people too, you tend to fall under one or two categories. You're a saver or you're a spender. And you're not all a saver, you're not all a spender. Usually it's a combination of both. But it's really knowing what type of personality are you and how do you play to your advantages. If you're a saver, you have to let loose like you do. It's actually really hard for savers to spend money.
That's my girlfriend.
It sounds like, okay, there you go. Okay, I was like, somebody in your relationship has to be that way.
Oh, she is so that way because her father is an ex-CFO, certified accountant. Like, I mean, very smart man with money. I mean, just their family knows a lot about money. So and it's like night and day. Like when we first got together, I'm like, oh my God, we are so opposite. I don't know if this is going to work. But I was like, you know what? This is just my opportunity to adapt. And this is good to be around people who know more than you, because suck it up, man. Like this will have to be just one of your vulnerabilities. Like, sorry, I can't be amazing at everything. I'm going to suck at some things. And this was something that compared to her experience and her knowledge and what she's done with her life and savings, I'm like, wow. But to your point, and she's starting to do this a little bit more now. She admitted, like, over the past few months, like, she's like, I noticed, like, I turned her on to a company by the name of Lululemon. And you ladies know what that company is.
Of course we do.
Yeah. And and she's like, I'll never go shopping there. So for her birthday, I bought her a couple pieces of clothing from there. Now, she doesn't go there all the time. She does not. But I noticed that she bought a few other pieces over the next month or so from that store. Yep. Versus going to Target. And she loves her Target. I don't know if you have Target in Boise. I'm sure you do.
We do.
But I was like, okay, you love your, or she calls it her Target. But I said, there's a quality difference. So I'm always trying to explain to people, because I'm a gear whore. I mean, I learned from just all the sports I did, mountain biking, skiing, the firefighting. It's like, if you invest, and pardon me using your terminology here, but if you invest in quality gear the first time, It will stand the test of time 2 to 3 times at least longer than that cheap crap. You'll feel better about it. It's a better quality of gear. You know it's going to last. And it's also going to be from a reputable company because you've paid for that better value. So I've had situations where literally the gear is like a year or two old. Something tore, something broke on it. And the company's like, don't worry about it. Send it back in. We'll fix it and ship it back or replace it. Like, there's a different level there. So that's how I'm a little bit like that when it comes to gear.
No, I agree.
And that's the thing. So that's the reason I'm connecting that back through. That's like Lululemon for you girls. Like, you can go to Target, and that's part of their training too. It's like, listen, you can go to Target and buy a cheap piece of workout gear. You're probably going to be replacing it next season. Whereas I've seen women tell me that they got Lululemon stuff that's like 3-4 years old. It's clearly a quality difference.
A huge quality difference. And I think that is something that's so hard for people that are really great at saving money is when it comes to spending money, even if you designate an account. So for me personally, I have a travel fund. And even though I have that money in my travel fund, I still get some serious anxiety about spending it because I'm like, oh my God, but I saved all this money. I mean, that's awesome. Even though that's what you designate it for, it still gives you anxiety. And so that's where your significant other, your friends, whoever it might be, they usually will balance you out a little bit more. And it's really powerful to have people that are opposites than you in your life. And I mean, business and in your personal life, it doesn't even matter. That can help bring you back down because at the end of the day, money is supposed to be enjoyed. Like, that's the purpose of it. It's not to make you feel anxious. It's not to make you feel restricted. It's so that you can enjoy life and you can have a really good time. And so you have to save for that, but you also have to spend for that too.
You know, I was just listening. Oh man, I think it was actually an audiobook and not a podcast for once. And I think it was from Robert Kiyosaki. I'm sure you're familiar with him.
Rich Dad, Poor Dad, you betcha.
Yeah. I believe that was the book. At least once a year, I pull it back out and I re-listen to it. I was just listening to it last week again because I try and do it now twice a year just because I think it's a classic and it just, there's a lot of good stuff in there. It's not all 100%, but I think it was in his piece that he talked about the soon as people learn that money doesn't exist. I think that's how he worded it. The money does not exist. It is, you got to realize it's not real. He said, the trick with money is you learn how to control it and manage it and utilize it as a tool. I don't know how he explained it. Maybe you can kind of relate to that a little bit better because I think that's important and it clicked with me.
Yeah. I think you're hitting exactly on it though. It's just that money it's just value. You're just exchanging value for value. So whether that's time, whether that's time for clothes, like whatever it might be, it's just value for value. And at the end of the day, money is just a tool. There's really nothing different between people that have multiple millions of dollars, huge net worths, and the people that have nothing. It's like they're just, the way they manage it is different. And that's why they have more of it in general, of course. But like, yeah, it's just a tool. Hmm. It's not good or bad. It's just a tool.
Well, I think that's important for people to realize because I know I'll be the first one to admit it. I have been like literally at those places where I'm not able to pay that next bill. Mm-hmm. And I'm fine now, but I mean, I'm not even kidding you. Like literally a year ago, I was between contracts. There wasn't money coming in. I'm trying to survive I'm trying to make this independent thing work. And like, you know, this is the life of an entrepreneur. Everybody thinks it's all amazing. Sorry.
No, it's not.
we're always not struggling, but we're always, pushing to succeed and build. And there's going to be struggles along the way. And I've literally throughout my life, I've been in those places where every time I threw change aside in that jar, like next thing you know, I'm going to a change machine to cash that change in. So I have an extra cash because I was like, I will never push myself to the point where I would start racking up like overdraft charges and stuff like that and checking accounts. I hear so many horror stories from people doing that. Like literally by the time they do get paid again, half their paycheck went away to overdraft fees in their checking account. I've never let that happen, but I've been close multiple times because I was always pushing the envelope and just trying to squeeze out some other thing, some other process, whatever it may be. And I've been there, man. I'm sure people listening to this, I hope, have been there too, because if they're going to relate to this, and I don't know if you've ever been there, because it sounds like you were pretty smart coming out of school with the whole splitting the salary thing.
Yeah. So I'll tell you a quick personal story that actually this is probably more of the reason why I got into personal finance And it was because my mom, because I know people listening are like, who's this Caucasian girl living in Boise, Idaho, who probably has never struggled a day in her life? And that's not true. It really isn't. So for me growing up, I watched my mom stay in an abusive and addictive relationship for 27 years. And the sole reason she was in that relationship for so long was because she didn't have the money to leave. Wow. Like, seriously, she didn't have the money. And so she finally did get divorced. And then that's when she moved to Boise. And so for a period of time, we slept on the floor of this really tiny apartment. And there's six kids in my family. So it's not Whoa. A small. Yeah, there's a lot. I don't know what my parents were thinking, but it's not a small family. And so I remember one day my mom and I were walking and we found a mattress in the garbage can. And so for us, we were like, heck yeah. Like, we were so excited about that. And I know that sounds disgusting, but
as long as it wasn't outside of a hotel.
No, it wasn't. Thank God. That would have been bad.
I have to be with you here. I'm like, you know, I'm a little dirty from living in the woods over the years. I'm like, you know, I would probably take that too.
Heck yeah. Like,
you could buy clean sheets, spray some Febreze on there.
Yep, exactly. And so I remember I was like 16 at that time. And for me, it was like, okay, A, I'm never going to be stuck in a situation because of money, something that I have control over. And B, I see what is a want and what is a need. And so I think that whenever we have crappy times in life, we have a choice. We can either view it as we're a victim and life is happening to us, or you can say, you know, this is a crappy time. It sucks. I don't deserve this. But damn it, I'm going to get through this on my own. And I think it's such a different mentality. And so if you can break through that victim mentality and you can say, I'm in control and this is the way I want my life to go, you'll start seeing amazing progress in your health, in your fitness, in your business, in your, I mean, every area is going to improve if you can take back control.
I agree with this from a control standpoint because, so I did actually read, like, your website is Whitney Hansen, H-A-N-S-E-N, for the listeners.com, because I know there's other spellings of Hansen out there. But your primary website, because I know you have a separate website, themoneynerds.com, which is the podcast. So, but yep. Your Whitney Hansen, I scrolled on, read through, and I loved actually a couple of taglines we can talk about later. But you did give a little bit of a hint that, you know, you didn't come up from a wealthy, I'll have it right here in front of me, a wealthy, formally educated family. So it's important to help people connect. And I think that's powerful, by the way, because I'm a marketing guy for you is good job, because we need to provide transparency. We need to provide reality. Not everybody is, you know, supposedly born with that proverbial silver spoon in your mouth.
No.
I would like to say, you know, I would say, if, I don't know if you ever had it on your site before, but I almost think like maybe you should add a line, man, and add that one line where, because that, to me, like I literally physically or mentally, I should say, in my head, pictured you picking up a mattress and smiling and running back down the street with it. So I don't know. I say, hey, I maybe throw that on the site. I thought that was a really cool point because it's raw, it's real. And I think people are afraid to share that type of transparency these days. And I think it's important to help you connect with people.
Yeah.
Because I think that's powerful. I mean, I'm already connecting with you.
Well, thanks, man. I know. Yeah. I mean, it's true. It's like we all go through crappy times. And my situation for somebody else is probably cakewalk. And, you know, we all go through different things. But I think it's how you choose to view that that makes you so much of a better person. And so I hope that people decide that they can take control of their life and that, you know, life is crappy sometimes. It can kick really hard and it's not always fun. But no. You do have control over how you respond to that.
Well, it's funny. So, like, I'm excited. I don't know if you've ever heard of this new event in San Diego called Thrive.
Yes.
It started last year. Have you ever heard of Cole Hatter? Or
no, but I've heard of the event.
Yeah. So I'm going there next weekend, and because the tagline just drew me in. It's Thrive is the brand, obviously, but it says make money matter, and I think. Another piece from your site is you kind of hint at people who have constant fear, or I think you're kind of tagging here about I think there's some keywords in there like poor mindset, stuff like that. And I think I might be one of those people that years ago, and maybe there's some of that still residually hanging in there psychologically, where if you didn't always have money, there's lots of books who talk about this. And I think even Kiyosaki probably has talked about this probably at some point in one of his books. But the point here is that people literally do get afraid of money. We don't realize it. I think we're afraid of success sometimes, and we're afraid of the freedom even though we say, yeah, we want that freedom and we want to be debt free. But I actually think that there's still some deep seated fear in that. And I don't know if you've come across that in some of your coachings with some of your clients.
1,000%, Scott. So people have so many limiting beliefs with their financial life. And it's a limiting belief, but that doesn't mean it's right or wrong. It's just being aware of what the heck do you actually believe. Okay. And so if you grow up in a really dysfunctional family, most of the time you view money as not being that great of a thing. Like, oh, it's so unattainable. I can't get money. It's not for me. And so that's a common belief. But you have to be aware of that for you to change that. And so the minute you can say, hey, you know, I'm not going to judge myself, but this is what I believe. That's kind of interesting. Then you can start to say, but why do I believe that? What's really going on? And so you can start to challenge those things once you become aware of what you actually truly believe.
Well, without sharing somebody else's privacy or anything, I mean, is there an example of that that you can kind of help us relate to? Because I'm immersed in this right now. And I think this is an important piece that we're discussing because I know personally, I know for a fact I've suffered from that. I think growing up with little or seeing the challenges, like my father was an entrepreneur his whole life. He still is. And my brother is as well. But I wanted nothing to do with that. I wanted everything as completely opposite of that, which is why I started chasing that whole corporate world and the professional gig. And of course, years later, realizing that that's not all it's cracked up to be. But I saw the struggle. You know, I saw my father over the years. He went through a couple bankruptcies. But one thing I realized now years later through maturity, it's like, you know what? Dad always had a roof over our head. He was always paying the bills. And he kept fighting to rebuild his business every single time. So now as maturity, it's like I look back and I'm like, whoa, you know, pull your head out of your ass, Scott. I think you got something to learn from there.
Completely. So one of the common things that I see, so I was working with a gal who just no matter what I would tell her, I would show her, no matter what, it was, I can't go to school without debt. Like I can't do it. And so I'm like, but there's scholarships, there's military, there's so many ways to pay for college. But no matter what it was, I have to take out student loans.
Wait, and so she told herself she had to do that?
Yeah, she truly believed that you could not go to school. She couldn't go to school without a student loan. That she just couldn't cash flow it at all.
Well, I ended up doing that, but there, to be fair, you've got a very valid point here. People don't realize there's now massive databases, online databases full of like every little thing that I never even thought. Like you could probably get a scholarship nowadays for losing a toe. I don't know. I'm just.
You probably can.
I mean, there's a lot of crazy stuff out there.
Peanut butter and jelly sandwich.
Yeah. So she she thought she could only do it with loans, and that's it.
That was it. Yeah. And so that one took a while for me to break through because there's this fine balance as a coach and as a friend. I mean, anything. You have to be really careful about being a nagger or being helpful. Mm-hmm. And so it's like you people have to learn this stuff on their own. You can help facilitate that discovery process, but you can't force anybody to believe something, which is really unfortunate because it would sometimes make life a lot easier, but you can't.
Well, no, and so, you got some validity there because we just discussed this morning on a different episode I was recording, and it was like, listen, people need to discover their own why and why they're doing this. Because a lot of people, they've already figured out the what. They know, she knows she wants to go to school. She knows she wanted to get a degree. She knew that she was willing to take out school loans. But she has to remind herself, like, well, why are you doing all of that?
Right.
And then if she's got a very, very clear why and she can tell you that, now you've got something as a coach to tie back to and use for fuel for that fire. But I realized that over the years when I was early on, I had to learn to become a better coach because I realized I needed to dig that out of people. And if they really didn't know yet, they might not be ready for me. I think
it's so true. Not everyone's ready for a coach.
Yeah. And I mean, was she, clearly it sounds like you kept going though.
kept going, kept working with her. Ultimately what made her realize that there could be something different was, this is going to sound really simple and cheesy, but really this was the solution. And it was to create a budget for her and show her, okay, look, this is how much you're making currently. If you go part-time in your job currently and go to school, this is what your income would be. You can still survive. You can still pay for a lot of college, especially if you're going to a community college, if you're going. So it's like showing people that they have those options and just showing them the math with their current situation usually opens up their eyes. And I'd say the best way to do that is just by budgeting. not the sexiest answer, but just budget your money and you can start to see the possibilities for your life.
So I'll be the first one to admit this. I've never had a budget.
Oh my God.
Yeah, you don't like me, do you?
Well, I do. I'm like, oh, here's the project. No, I'm kidding.
No,
it's common.
I'll admit this. I have no problem being real, man. People listen to this show, guess what? Scott's not perfect. I know people that have also never had a budget, but they've also were better with money than me. So I just said, well, if I need more money, I'll just work harder or be smarter with what I'm doing with the money. So I will say, like, I have the ability to direct it and redirect it and maybe budgety-ish when I will say, as I got older, I'm like, okay, you've got a goal to go on this new big ski trip, or you're going on this trip or that trip. So, hey, I'm good at the short-term budgeting. I was never good at the long-term budgeting. So, and I think that is a piece of one, I guess, layer of remaining stress that's still in my life professionally and personally, because I don't see my girlfriend really living off a budget, but to be fair, she has no debt. So she's been very good. I mean, she was, and again, when we first started dating, I would look at this as, oh, well, that's because of her family. And I said, well, Scott, is that really fair? Because her family supported her and helped her learn these things and set her up for success. So, and that's nothing against my family. My family just didn't know how to teach that. So I didn't learn that from my upbringing. I saw, you know, struggle. I saw, you know, some bad ways of managing money. No offense. I love my father. I love my money, but my mother as well. But there's not, I don't feel I learned a lot about money from my upbringing.
Yeah.
So
most of us don't.
We've had to learn a lot of this stuff ourselves. And that doesn't mean we learned everything the right way. I'm sure you come across that all the time too.
Yep. All the time. Scott, there's one thing you touched on that I think we should definitely talk about, because it's
very
interesting.
Hey, you're the co-host here. Okay, shut me down. Let's rewind back.
So you said you've never budgeted, yet you've also lived an extremely minimalist life. So if your expenses are, I mean, barely anything, you pay rent, you pay a little bit of gas in your car, and you buy food. I guarantee you are still doing some type of a budget in your head. Like you have to be. I think we're always thinking, okay, and you've never overdrafted, which props to you, man. That's impressive.
Well, no, but I've had a couple of overdrafts. let's be real here. If I look back over the years, listen, I am not a zero overdraft guy. But those one or two times that happened, man, I got pissed. First I got pissed at the bank, but then I was like, all right, Scott, be pissed at yourself, dude. Like, that's all you, man. You need to be personally and collectively accountable for your own results. Don't be passing the blame game. You screwed up. You tried running too tight, or your budget that you had in your head was not correct.
True.
So I've been there a few times, but that's why I became so anti. Like, I'm still one of those people that likes to look at his bank account like every single week. I know that's from a lot of the books I've read, like, you shouldn't do that. But I'm still that. I guess my budget is more real time.
Yep.
Again, I think I hinted at that. Maybe it's short term. Is that what you're kind of hitting at there? Like, yeah, I have the ability to kind of look at it and crunch numbers, but I'm not doing it in a long term way. Maybe, I don't know.
You've got to, and if you're checking your bank account once a week, you're doing actually more than most people.
Oh,
then so yeah, I'm most doing people that. Are like, maybe I check it, you know, maybe once a month. And I'm like, oh my God, you got to be looking at that stuff more. So even though you're not sitting down with your calculator and your pen and you're running all the numbers, you're still checking in with yourself to see, oh, you know what? I overspent this week. I need to maybe calm down a little bit for the rest of the month. And so you're probably still doing some type of a budget. It's just not formalized.
No, it's all real time in my head. You're right.
Yeah. Yeah. But I mean, definitely try writing it down. It's kind of like fitness. So if you are working with a client and they're trying to lose weight, and they have no freaking idea how much they eat, what's the first thing you would do?
Journal.
Yep. You start, okay, tell me, write it all down.
Let like,
me
just it's not even allowed. Dude, just 1 week. Like, don't even write the whole month down. Just
that's,
give me,
see, that,
or start
that's
with
exactly
2 days.
The case.
Start with 2 days.
Yep. And that's exactly how it is, too, for personal finance. There's really no difference there. So it's get aware, how much do you actually spend? And then you can start making adjustments.
Well, I will tell you, I am pretty organized. Like, I've got one of my marker boards literally has four different color coded categories. One of them has the all the accounts in order by percentage, So APR.
That's great.
And then I have another section on what's been paid off. And then I have, just so I can remember what's been paid off, because I'm trying to work on that snowball effect. I'm sure you've heard of that terminology.
Yeah. Big fan.
Real quick, for the listeners, what is the snowball effect?
Snowball is paying off the smallest debt first, regardless of interest rate.
Oh,
paying that one off and then making that payment. So if it's like a $25 payment on the smallest, once that's paid off, you put all of that $25 towards your second debt and you keep doing it and doing it. And it makes a big difference.
Okay. I'm not really doing, I might be doing the dirty snowball effect.
Are you doing the avalanche maybe, where you're paying off the highest interest rate first?
Yeah.
Okay. Avalanche. Oh,
so
yes.
I learned something new. All right. So I'm doing the avalanche.
Yeah. You're doing the avalanche.
But I've heard a lot of more people. So I think it's important to help people, these little tips, because the snowball effect has helped me over the years, a lot of different times, because you know what? It's like in fitness, man. It's like, dude, I need a little win. You know, it's like, give yourself a little win. Just a little something. Just get a little taste of that reduction. I don't know.
Yep. That's pretty much it. You got to get those little pat on the backs, and that's what keeps you motivated for a lot of people.
Yeah,
not
but
for
I mean,
everyone.
I will tell you, there's the paid off category. There's the pending. I just looked at it. There's a pending category, which has everything in order by APR and whatever. And the balances get updated once a quarter. I don't update them on the market board once a month. That's just too much work for me. I'm too busy. So there is stuff written down, but then below that, to fuel what's above it, there's a list of needs versus wants. And those are broken out by short-term versus long-term, and I do have literally right next to it on the wall, my vision board. So, I am old school.
Great.
I'm old school on the vision board. I haven't done much to change it, but I built it once and I'm like, I'm not going to take it down. I don't know.
I love that. That stuff works. It sounds cheesy, but it's good stuff.
I was very Mr. That's cheesy. Never going to do that for a long time. And I was like, really? Is it really that bad?
Plus, so what made it change for you?
Just books, you know? I've been all over the place with my research. I've researched and looked into the whole power of attraction, the law of attraction. I've watched the movie and read the book, The Secret. I've listened to it digitally 6 times over the past 2 years. So I have friends that think that's kind of hokey. I've been through countless self-help books because I just love it. It's kind of like a side passion because I love sorting through the material. And then my brain just pulls out things that I remember, my little nuggets. And that's why I've become a voracious consumer of podcasts and audiobooks, because I travel so much. So it's like, dude, just keep crunching stuff. And when things click, they click.
That's awesome.
But multiple times, multiple people that I've started to kind of respect online and follow some of their teachings, they've all at least at one point in their life hinted at, I'd say 85 to 90% of them have hinted at a vision board. And it's not for everybody. But I'm a very big supporter of, I learned this with my psychology education in school, but the VAC method of the learning styles. Like some people were visual, some people are auditory, some people are kinesthetic. So it was just VAC, V-A-K. It's important, especially as a coach, I'm sure you've been hopefully learned that too. Like not everybody learns the same way. So for me, I realized I wanted some more visual action around me. So even if I don't even look at that thing every day, it's right next to my head right now. But have I looked at it in the past couple of days? No, I'm looking at it right now. But yeah, I think when I'm ready to look at it, I look at it. It's there when I need it. That's why I think I still have it hanging up.
I love that. That's so great. I think those are really important too.
Yeah. I mean, the girlfriend doesn't think it's great wall art, but...
Come on, man.
I said, listen, you're a skier, I'm a skier. There's some cool photos of some awesome cabins and some ski trips up there. So it's like, at least there's something. So
yeah, no, that's pretty good.
Yeah, like I don't have fancy cars and watches on my thing. I'm not into that stuff. I'm into the lifestyle, the life experience, the trips. Like if I had my way, I believe weddings should be thrown out the window. Here comes some crazy talk. I'm like, dude, take all that money. Mm-hmm. And then plan 3 to 4 epic vacations.
Heck
because
yeah.
You'll remember way the hell more from that than one silly night with very expensive bills from caterers and DJs and a whole bunch of people that are going to be in some cheesy photographs. I don't know. Yep. That's just me.
I'm actually right there with you. Oh. Ironically, I know female perspective, I should be all gung-ho about that stuff, but no.
Well, it probably helps because you're also a money person. You're like, I could do so many other things with that cash flow.
Oh, heck yeah. Absolutely. I'm like, do you know the kinds of vacations I could take with $20,000?
Yeah. Or, and oh my God, there was a wedding we went to a few months ago. The most expensive wedding I've ever seen in my entire life.
Oh, really?
Over a quarter million.
Oh, geez.
I'm not kidding you.
You gotta be kidding me.
I'm not kidding you. I thought my girl, I'm like, we're like, so what do you think this costs? And she's like, easily a quarter mil. I'm like, you're joking, right?
That is so crazy.
I mean, it was pretty extravagant. But I know these were people who live in New York City. We're talking like some South African like jewelry money. I didn't know where I was. I was like, yeah. I was like, dude, I don't know where I am right now. I'm kind of tripping out. It's kind of crazy.
That is amazing.
But I mean, you know, kudos to them for having the lifestyle. Like the grandmother matriarch of the family paid for it all. Yep. So
God, we hope. See, that's the problem.
That's what I heard. But I mean, okay. Because like she comes from like jewelry money. I don't know. They have a lot of.
Oh, like legit.
Oh yeah. It was two Jewish families getting married. I believe that one whole side of the family, like they all had South African accents. So I'm like, okay, I'm literally, there's gotta be some type of connection between jewelry, New York City, South African, because that's a thing, by the way. I know you're in Boise, but
they do that.
There's a whole connection there. Like, hey, we own the mines. Let's bring it over. Let's resell it. Very expensive here in New York City and blah, blah, blah. I don't know. That's a whole thing, but a quarter million dollar wedding. Come on. Really?
Yeah.
It was absolutely gorgeous.
God.
I mean, the food was amazing. It was awesome.
I guess, you know, the perspective I have on that, and this is what, I mean, to each their own, of course, it's your life, do you. But if it's, we have to view it as proportions, right? So it's like proportion of income. If you buy a really crazy cool jet and you're stoked about that and you are making a couple $1 million a year, you know, that's like me buying a Happy Meal, like not that big of a deal. And so I guess if you look at it in
We do not promote Happy Meals on this show. Sorry.
How dare, you're done.
Yeah.
Probably not Subway either then, right?
No. I don't really like yoga mat rolls, so.
Oh, God, no. No.
I don't know if you ever heard that report, but.
Yeah, I actually did. I did. Yeah. I'm into bikini competition stuff, figure in bikini competitions like Tony.
Oh, so you, is that how you guys got together? Sorry,
no,
I don't want to change subjects, but that's hilarious.
School.
That's okay.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, since high school. We started doing competitions. Let me think. I think I started first. So ironically, the same time I was paying off debt, I was also losing weight. And so I dropped 30,000 in debt and lost 30 pounds at the same time. It's pretty cool. And then started doing
so
the
free.
Competition. Oh, I was like, I'm a new woman.
Seriously.
It was great.
People are just happy to drop 10 pounds to feel like a new woman. I mean, mm-hmm. or man for that matter. Those guys need to lose weight too, but that's pretty significant.
It was pretty fun.
And you did them both at the same time.
Both at the same time.
Was there a reason behind that? Or just seemed to kind of fall in line?
I mean, clearly I was going through my quarter life crisis, so I'm not quite sure there, but it was just
There's
timing.
There's a book on that. I've read
Is
it.
Is there really?
Yes.
Quarter-life crisis?
Oh, yeah. I highly recommend it.
Huh.
I'm not kidding you. I didn't read it till I think I was 27. I'd gone through a bad breakup and like my head was up my ass. I use that term a lot because I'm guilty. Most of us guys need to actually start admitting that more. I'm one of the worst ones at it. But it's pretty amazing when you find material like that and just it clicks. Like I was literally in the Walden or whatever. What's the big Barnes & Noble bookstore, trying to find material for research because that's where my brain works. I'm very analytical. So I'm like, okay, there's something wrong. There's got to be something I could read or research and figure this out.
I love it.
And I found the book Quarter Life Crisis. I think I owned it up until I moved out west. And then I think I added that to my library that I donated. But I think that's a great book. I'm sure it's probably still around. So
I'm going to have to check that out myself. I'm not going through one, but I think it'd be a good read.
I think it'd be good for your clients. I mean, it sounds like mm-hmm. from your everything we're talking about here, you don't just work with the mature adults or the intermediate. It sounds like, are you trying to niche? I did some research into your websites. It seems like you're mm-hmm. kind of trying to really niche that age, that millennial age group that you're also from.
Yep.
Is that all you want to work with, or is that primarily like most of your niche?
Primarily, that's most of my niche. Ironically, because of my background and my upbringing, I attract a lot of single moms as well.
Okay.
So that's kind of a fun way to go too. But yeah, no, it's primarily younger people.
Okay.
Mainly because it's like the language, we relate so well. It's just, that's where my area of expertise lies as well. So I try not to stray too far from that. Hmm. I'm not about to try to tell people how to navigate retirement at 65 and how to withdraw all their funds. Like, that's not my area.
Okay.
I can teach them how to save for that, but that, yeah, I stick to what I'm good at for sure.
So real quick, before we forget about this, I did Google it real quick. Quarter life crisis. And the one, there's actually a few different volumes now. apparently this is what I hear too. Apparently the millennial generation is definitely embracing more quarter life crises these days. So, but the one I read was published back in 2001. And it was Quarter Life Crisis, The Unique Challenges of Life in Your 20s. And it was by Alexandra Robbins. So I'll make sure this is in our show notes because we have amazing show notes. So we're just going to add that into our list because I usually like to load it up with a bunch of links. But yeah, if you want to check that out, I mean, according to Google, there's a bunch of other ones now too.
That's awesome. I'll definitely check this one out.
But I think this is important. It's, you got to have the tools. All right. Some people need stuff like this. It's okay mm-hmm. to go buy a book like this if it helps you, or at least get your head wrapped around it. I don't know.
Yep. Yep. I agree. I totally agree. I think there's a lot of really amazing resources. A little Audible. Do you use Audible?
Oh, we just talked about that. Audiobooks. Are you kidding me?
Oh, so it is Audible that you're
using?
Oh,
yeah. I am okay. Crushing Audible. I turned my girlfriend on Audible, which is annoying because again, for smart financials, I'm already paying mm-hmm. for it. She didn't really think she'd use it because she likes books, but she's also in the car a lot as a doctor of veterinary. She travels a lot to the horse farms to go work on them. So yep. I said, listen, here's my login. Check it out. So now she pays for the account because she does it more than I do, which I'm okay with. But now because now she pays for it, she gets that free download one every month that you get with the initial membership. So
so she gets first dibs on the books.
Yeah. So I pretty much buy all mine now.
I love that. So here's a little tip with Audible.
Okay.
I use this a lot. If you start the process and you start speed up the speed to about like 2.
Oh yeah.
So double the speed and then go down a little bit. So then it feels a little bit more normal. You can get through books so freaking fast. It's not even funny.
I will tell you just to enhance that tip of yours for our mm-hmm. listeners, it really depends on the author and the reader. So there's some great, and this is the same. I do the same with podcasts, by the way. I don't know if you do that with podcasts, but I do the same thing. So right now I think my iTunes is set to 1.25, and I think my Stitcher app, which is what I prefer to use, even though in the podcast world, yes, people, please use iTunes because your downloads on iTunes matter more, including when you give her show and my show a 5-star review. Quick little plug. But the important thing here is that if the person is speaking at a realistic pace, and they have very clear linguistics and they come across very well, again, to your point, bump it up to 2. If mm-hmm. you can handle it and it's not too chipmunky, great. If not, back it back. So like, it really just depends on what I'm listening to, but I'm usually at least 1.25 or 1.5. Unless like I'm evaluating my recent podcast, so then I drop it back to standard because I want to actually hear how we sound in real life. Because it's weird. It's still weird listening to myself on a podcast. So
it is awkward. It really is.
Yeah. Like, how new is your show?
Like 3 weeks old.
Okay. That's why he said it was new, but I don't know how new it was. That's awesome.
Yeah. It's craziness. So I'm right in the heat of it.
Well, let's we're already on it. Let's just jump in. I love the spontaneity of the episode. So money nerds. Okay. Uh-huh. Give us a little dirt on this. I mean, obviously you geek out on money and you're a bikini model nerd. So that said, why money nerds? Why did you want to get the show going?
Yeah. So the whole premise of it is sharing inspiring stories from people doing quirky things with money. So that could be paying off a ton of debt. It could be living in tiny houses. It can be, I mean, all across the board. So if anybody has a really weird money story, those are the kinds of people I want to talk to.
So this is not just millennials?
No, it's all across the board. It really is. So I interview male, female, different ages, different walks of life.
Okay.
And yeah, it's just primarily sharing stories. At this point, I'm on the site right now, and
the most recent episode's got a bald dude guy cartoon. So clearly, and he sold the Mercedes Benz. So I'm like, okay, that's definitely not a millennial. So
yeah, he actually is. It's crazy. He, amazing story. $46,500 he paid off over 2 years and 3 months.
Wow.
And it was really cool. And the way he did that was by selling his Mercedes-Benz, which was kind of his dream car. That was his out-of-college car. And so he was the cool dude with all of his friends and decided that that $500 payment would be better suited towards paying off debt. And so that's what he did. Yeah.
So really now, cool. Did you, so obviously that's only what you got. I'm up here. You got four episodes up. Mm-hmm. Are you trying to, well, what is your ratio? Are you trying to shoot for like one episode a week? Like, are you going to slowly build steam? Like, what are you, Tony, working on with this?
Yeah. You know, for right now, it's just one per week.
Okay.
And that's like, that's my limit at the moment. But as it continues to grow and gets more popular, hopefully.
And are you like me? Are you focused on organic growth? I mean, just through natural sharing, cross sharing, obviously coaching your guests on your show to, hey, when this show goes live, please, you know, add it to your email list. Please do us the courtesy of at least cross sharing this to help the show grow. Is it stuff like that? Or are you actually trying to consider some type of, I don't know, some type of investment into that? I don't know.
No, at the moment, just more organic. And I mean, thank God, I've been doing this for 3 years now. So I've got an email list built up and I have an audience already, which is perfect. Awesome. And so for me, that definitely helps.
Well, and I think podcasting is powerful. It's been around for many years now, actually, but it's really kicking into gear. And I'm already, you're going to be like either episode 17 or 18, and I just started September 4th. So
nice.
I'm not even 2 months old yet. So, but because I'm doing two episodes a week, because from my research, the really, really good shows that I seem to be hooked on are at least 2 to 3 episodes a week. But I'm also like you, I'm trying to be a realist. Like, this is not my primary gig. It's actually costing money, not making me money.
Yes, exactly.
But I also don't want to chase that either. I want things to happen naturally. I want the show to grow. I want our audience to enjoy this. And it sounds like you're doing the same here with these different, now are these guests, are these more interview style or are they co-hosting style as well?
You know, it's a little bit of both. So I do ask some very strategic questions, trying to get certain information out.
Okay.
But in general, it's very conversational. Hmm. It's, hey, let's just chat about money and your story and financial tips for success.
Like I said, you're in my queue for this weekend. So I try and,
oh, I'm so excited.
I got to get a taste here. And the good thing is I can catch up really fast because
one
of my favorite podcasts was the Solopreneur Hour with Michael O'Neill.
Phenomenal.
And I don't know if you listen to his show.
I do.
Yeah. Michael's good.
Actually a lot.
So, and he's, when I found him, I had like, I think it was right around episode 60 or 65. So it's a little ways back. And I went back and I crushed it for about 9 or 10 days and got all the way caught up.
Man, that's incredible.
But I was committed because I was liking where he was going and I was new to podcasting, but I totally liked his guests. So I was like, I just need to get caught up because they kept referencing stuff from old episodes and it was annoying the hell out of me. So I said, screw it. I'm going to go back. I'm going to hit none and get all caught up. And then I don't have to worry about living in this weird past that I don't even understand. So
that is so great. Yeah, that's a good one. Digital marketer, perpetual traffic, also a great one.
I'm a big marketing fan because that is obviously my background too.
Yeah, it's pretty awesome. They do a really good job.
Yeah, there's a lot. There's just hundreds of thousands of platforms now and podcasts. But to my point, the reason why I brought this up is for you and myself, if you do have the gift of gab, and you hinted that at the beginning of this episode, you said, you know, I realize I don't want to be in a cubicle and I do like to talk to people. So you getting out and taking the risks, starting to build your own brand, build your own coaching practice, build your own community. I noticed that your main WhitneyHanson.com website does have its own community link on there. I'm a big supporter of that because then you create your own posse, your own group. I mean, it's like, hey, man, some people, if they really want that one-on-one or that group cohesion, great, hop into the community. If you don't click, you don't click, you hop out, whatever. But then sometimes the email list isn't enough for a lot of people. They want to feel like they're a part of something.
Yeah. I'd say most people do these days.
Yeah.
The email list is just not enough.
No, it's not. It's just one more way to stay in touch. This is marketing 101. I mean, to be fair, if people like listening to me, great. They can listen to the podcast. If they want to hop on my email list, great. They can do that through the website too. If not, they can follow. I mean, I'm everywhere. If they want to go on Instagram and look at some of the quotes that I post, awesome. So it's the same thing. I tell people, like, you don't need to do the same thing on every single platform, but it's, if you can handle a couple of platforms at the same time and mix it up, you'll attract the people who are supposed to be attracted to you. If people don't follow you, then okay, move on.
Yep. Don't lose sleep over it.
But I like this. I'm actually looking forward to your show now because it's, especially if you guys are sharing best practices and tips.
Mm-hmm. We do. Okay. We definitely do. And it's always so different. So I will say with personal finance, be careful, right? I know we've even chatted about this and in this book, you heard this, and in this book, you've heard this.
Yes.
And at the end of the day, just seriously do one thing, only one, and stick to it and do what works for you. Hmm. So whatever feels right for your financial life, that's the thing you should do. Don't get into like, there's one right way and wrong way. It's not that way. Just do one thing that works for you. Don't get bogged down by all the details.
So you're our co-host today. So I'm going to give you a chance here to bust my balls. So, cause I don't care. I've been trying to make that snowball thing or avalanche thing, and I've been back and forth on that. So if I've been back and forth on it over the past year or two, like it's working and then I kind of get distracted, does that mean it's not something good? Or does that just mean I'm just crazy?
No, you're just a little crazy. I'm teasing. So it sounds like what's happening for you specifically is you're getting committed to this one plan, but you're growing a business. And your business at this time, you already said you prioritize making money, which I'm with you. You can only cut expenses so far.
Yeah, yeah, that's
but
true.
You do eventually have to prioritize, how do I make more money?
Yes.
And so for business people, it's a little bit different because there's going to be times where your business takes more capital. Maybe you're testing some new Facebook ads or whatever it might be. Mm-hmm. But that is probably what's deterring you from getting that result faster, would be my assumption.
You're pretty much spot on there. Like if I want to test a Facebook ad, I don't have a budget. I just go and do it. I mean, so I'm like, you know what? Actually, no, I know where I'm at that week because I do check my accounts weekly and I know what's going on. And I'm like, I know if I haven't used it in a few weeks, like I don't do Facebook ads every single month. It depends on if I'm doing stuff for a client or I'm doing stuff for myself. I'm like, you know, I'm going to experiment here. Let's fire this off for the next like 3-4 days and see what happens. So a lot of that stuff is spontaneous. And admittedly, like this Thrive event was not technically planned. I mean, it popped up as an opportunity a few weeks ago, and Michael O'Neill is going to MC the event. And actually, Tony's coming, right?
Oh, yeah, he is. Yeah. That's right.
He told me he's crashing at Mike's house, so I didn't even think about it. I was like, I know Michael longer. I didn't even think about asking for that. So I'm paying for the suite. I'm paying for the suite hotel room at the Manchester Hyatt downtown San Diego. But you'll be proud of me. There's a private Thrive group for all the attendees and past attendees. And I put a post in there saying, hey guys, I'm all booked. Hotel's rocking. I upgraded to the double queen bedroom options. So if people are on a budget, I'm willing to take on a roommate. So
nice.
Because I don't care. And plus, that's just one more way to network and connect with other professionals. So there's actually one person already commented on that this morning. So I'm waiting to see if they're going to commit or not. But I don't care. I'll share a room. It doesn't matter to me.
Heck yeah. And you do. You're right. You meet so many cool people that way.
Yeah. Yeah. So, hey, if that means I split the cost in hotel room, smart budgetary move that can offset this spontaneous trip that wasn't technically in the budget. I did have a goal before the end of the year to attend one more event, but technically not all the funding was set aside. So this is what we were talking about earlier about I sort of budget, sort of not.
So yeah.
When it comes to my
business.
Let me
give you a good rule of thumb.
Yeah, I don't know.
Good rule of thumb with business stuff specifically. So if you guys aren't starting a business, sorry, bear with me just for a sec. But if you are a business owner, a good rule of thumb is to put aside 10% of your revenue. So your revenue, not your profit, for conferences and that kind of stuff. So when you have a course that comes up and you're like, God, I really want to buy that course. You have the money to do that. And so that tends to be a good rule of thumb.
Okay. I'm actually writing that down. I'm not kidding you literally right now. 10% of revenue, not profit.
Not profit. Yep. You're going to save a little bit more faster. It might hurt, but it is the best thing you can do for your business.
And this is specifically, like you're talking this, like you're calling this a conference budget or a training budget? Because there's so many other things. It's not just general business savings. This is specifically for conference or trainings.
Yep, exactly. Continuing education.
Okay. Because I'm a big supporter of that. I tell people all the time, like, there's clients of mine that they don't go to trainings. Like, they stick just to maybe, like, their basic, like, trainings that happen in their industry. And I invited a couple colleagues that are clients of mine. I'm like, listen, you should come out to this event. Mm-hmm. And I said, because this is about the bigger picture. This is what supposedly why we're all doing all this. And nobody took me up on the offer. And I shared with them the Michael O'Neill discount code, the solo hour code. You know, I was like, hey, use solo hour, you get a discount. Like, we don't have to pay the full price. Nobody took me up on the offer. I'm like, you know what? not everybody thinks this way, but you have to get out to events, not just from the networking aspect. And again, for the listeners, this isn't just about business. This is just life in general. Get out of your hole, get out of your little hobble. I mean, or your at home office. I have an at home office, and I joked around about this earlier. Like, I love going out and doing stuff at a Starbucks. It just changes up the location, or a local cafe or whatever. Have Wi-Fi, I will travel. If you don't have Wi-Fi, I activate the Wi-Fi on my iPhone, and I can still work from anywhere with my laptop. So it's not everybody's into that. I get it. But if we're going to grow ourselves, it doesn't matter what generation we're in. You need to get out and start mixing and matching with other people, especially if it's not directly in your industry. If it's an opportunity to grow yourself personally and professionally beyond your business, that's the stuff we need to start thinking about. And that's why I'm going to Thrive. So this is about the bigger picture. This is about life. I love that tagline, make money matter, because I'm a big supporter of charities and nonprofit work. I love volunteering because it's like, it's not always about the dollars. Like, there's organizations I support that have plenty of money coming in, but they don't have enough horsepower. They don't have enough people to do the lifting and do the sweat work. And that's why, I'm a big supporter of this, like making the time in your life. I don't know if that's something you and Tony have started working into your lifestyles yet, but that'll be some coaching for me.
Yep. We definitely do. Yeah. We definitely do. So there was a cool conference I attended earlier this week, and it was a gal from Experis, which is Manpower. It's a big talent recruiting agency.
They're a part of Manpower?
I think they're maybe the parent company.
Oh, okay. I've used Manpower years ago for hiring.
Yeah. Okay. So it was a gal from that company.
Oh.
So she came into Boise and was chatting about millennials in the workplace and hiring millennials later and how that's changing. And one of the things that I thought was so cool and so relevant to what we're chatting about now is that millennials don't plan on retiring at like 65. They actually plan on working longer and very willing to. Like, they want to do work that matters. And so because of that, millennials are also, they tend to have lots of different passions. And so it's not just my 9-to-5. It's my 9-to-5 and my side hustle and this, and I'm doing this. And so because of that, you have to learn how to brand yourself as a person. And it's not just your 9-to-5. So conferences are not just for business people. It's for everybody. They really are.
I'm a big supporter of them. I'm glad you brought that up, because it's funny. Like, I don't just work with businesses. Like, I'm a big supporter of what I just simply call personal branding. I learned that many, many years ago when the very powerful platform known as LinkedIn launched. And I hopped on that when it launched. So I've been on LinkedIn a long time. What people need to realize is that in the beginning, like, LinkedIn has morphed over the years. It's still stayed pretty much flat, but people call it social media, and it drives me nuts. Granted, they've done a lot of enhancements lately that make it seem similar to some of these other social media platforms like Facebook, but it's not the same. LinkedIn is primarily has become a powerful tool for recruiters. But more importantly, one thing I learned about it before I even understood SEO and search engine optimization and keywords for websites and blah, 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 was when I Googled myself, I barely existed. When I put myself on LinkedIn, because it's such a keyword-rich platform, I existed. And whenever I Googled my name, LinkedIn to this day still outranks almost everything else on the internet when it comes to your name.
Oh, wow.
I don't know if you knew that. So.
No, I didn't.
So I always tell people, by the way, you have a pending request for me.
shows you how much I use it.
See? But the most important thing there is, because that will always be the professional platform. That will never be social media. That is not, yes, there's some socializing going on there, but in a professional way. So I tell people, if you want to control how you potentially exist online, yes, the master plan is to get everybody to have their own website, because that is truly your brand. But not everybody's ready for that yet. Not everybody's ready to, like, take their, launch, let's say, livethefuel.com, and then create a custom domain email. So it's not, livethefuel@gmail.com. Like, these are all things we're going to learn. You have to learn throughout the branding process. And it drives me nuts when people don't do that. But my point is that with LinkedIn, that is your chance to exist professionally. It does not mean you're looking for a job. It just says, hey, this is my professional profile. This is everything that I do. Now, granted, I have built my profile beyond what most people would do. I include a lot of stuff that I include on my Facebook profile, a lot of my personal actions, my activities, because that is part of my brand. That is who I am. Mm-hmm. When I used to want to get hired by companies, I wanted to make sure that when they were doing their little research, that there's nothing to hide. They get all that oh, Scott's a charity guy. He's a volunteer work guy. He's on a couple of boards of some charities. He was a firefighter. I never hid that. You know, I'm into my sports, my mountain biking, my skiing. So I teach people, I talk about this a lot in like some of my speaking events, is like, you got to build your personal brand. It's a long story short, because you're not always going to be with that company. Millennials will bounce. Even the X-Gen, I'm X-Gen, we have bounced. I've never spent longer than 5 years at a company. So
yeah,
it is what it is.
I think that's so normal too. And so it's a big part of your financial life too. It's like your income and your expenses matter. Mm-hmm. And you have to be optimizing your career as well, because that ultimately impacts your finances directly.
Well, and that's why I think it goes back to you and what you're teaching us and what you're trying to help people with. Obviously, primarily millennials, but I think even as adults, especially with your, I'm sorry, millennials are also adults; they're just younger. But the X gen, the baby boomer gen, whatever, is your job will change, your career will change. Heck, if you're an entrepreneur or you have a side hustle, that will change. My side hustles have changed. So it's important to have something, a platform, an existence that's going to transcend all these lifestyle transitions. And I think what's important, why I was excited to bring you on once I learned more about you, was I am weak at that. I survive it, I will crush it, and I will overcome it. But the most important thing here is I still have a lot to learn about it. And the most important thing there is that, are you building a sustainable livelihood financially, no matter what you're doing, that will allow you to transcend those struggles and hit those transitions smoother with less speed bumps and less stress. And I think that's the most important thing that you're doing, and people like Robert Kiyosaki and all these other books that I've read, which is teaching us that, again, money technically doesn't exist. It's how you manage the value and control that. So
that's my rant. That's beautiful. I like it. I completely agree with you.
Yeah. So, wow, we've been talking a while today. This has been great. I'm gonna have to bring you back on as like a financial advisor on the show or something. We'll have to have a couple of follow-up episodes eventually. So,
happy to. That'd be fun.
Yeah, because I like your energy. I think it's important. And it's so. Here's a funny thing: a lot of people don't realize is the way I built this show. I don't put it into the branding information, but I'm excited about the millennial generation. And I've used to manage some millennials, so I get it. And it's taken some of my own work to go to conferences and learn about that. And a lot of the baby boomer generation do not understand them. They barely understood my generation. So I'm not trying to criticize. I'm just trying to open people's eyes and ears and say, hey guys, you gotta adapt. And I think what's important, what you're doing here, is that what you just said, which is millennials, they want more. They want to do more. They want to know that what they're doing means something. But the other important thing here is that they're also more than capable to multitask, to function in other domains, because they want to do more with their lives. They don't just want to be a boring 9-to-5er or 9-to-7er or 8-to-6er. These people who are working, like I used to do, like 50, 60-hour work weeks for a salary. Mm-hmm. I was like, I never got paid more for that. They want to be able to say, hey, I crushed it today. I'm going to head out and go do something else. And it's okay, because I'm still dedicated to you guys and I still love what I'm doing, but I'm going to have something else too, because I just have that much energy and I want to do that. Mm-hmm. And for your point and what you're doing is, if they're coming out of college and they can get on the right financial track ahead of time, so they don't have to learn through the mistakes that I've done and other people have done. And if my podcast episode with you could get through to one person, I think we're making a difference.
Oh, I agree completely.
So
completely.
So you got the Money Nerds podcast. You got WhitneyHanson.com. I love the fact that I can actually find the Money Nerds podcast through WhitneyHanson.com. Thank you. Thank you for creating backlinks for yourself. That makes things easier. I love your disclaimer from your primary site. It is, side effects of implemented knowledge may include increased net worth, confidence with money, and in some cases, no more debt. I think that's classy, because it's like, it can be that easy if you're willing to put in the work and actually listen.
Absolutely. It's not a complicated thing. Don't make it too hard. If somebody tries to sell you on jargon, I mean, run away from that person, because it does not have to be that hard. The hardest part is just sticking to your plan. It's more of the mental side.
And I think that's important to help people understand you as a coach. And I've not worked with you yet, but I could definitely say that I can at least start to recommend people talk to you, because I've been a coach a long time. I was a coach in the corporate world. I've been a ski race coach, a CrossFit coach. I've done a lot of different coaching roles. And I think the most biggest thing that I've learned from my mentors is that you remain open to adapt to your audience. And to the point you just said is, do not drown them in jargon.
No.
Fancy words mean nothing. It's, are you hearing what I'm going through? Are you adapting to what I'm going through? And can you relate to me as your, I guess you want to call it a pupil or your customer, whatever you want to call him. But it's like, do you understand what I'm doing? And are you trying to drown me in fancy knowledge because you're trying to make yourself look cooler? Or are you actually here to help me? And are you actually listening to me?
Yeah. Do you really care?
Exactly.
Yep.
And it's sometimes hard. Sometimes we start caring too much in some of those coaching relationships, and you got to be careful of that too.
Yeah, that I have not quite figured out. So we can definitely chat about that sometime.
We'll have to, because I've had to learn from that over the years. We start taking things personally, and it's professionally we can't do that. I learned that a lot from some colleagues of mine that continued on in their psychology education. Like, all I did was minor in it, but people who chose to really commit to that profession and go to the doctorate level, the PhD, master's, all that stuff. It's like, you really got to be committed for that stuff. That's legit. And even they will tell you, yes, there is definitely best practices on how to prevent yourself from being overwhelmed by the fact that some people just aren't getting it, or they don't want to get it, or they claim they wanted to change and they don't actually want to change. And sometimes you do have to walk away or let that relationship dissolve. And then hopefully they awaken themselves and they come back later stronger and better to work with you again. Or maybe you just don't work again, whatever it may be. But sometimes all these coaching relationships don't always work out.
Yeah, it's true. It is something that I have to work on myself, is learning that, because it is kind of hurtful. You're like, oh my God, I just want to help you. But you can't help everybody unless they're willing to be helped themselves.
Yeah. And I mean, in business, you want to help everybody, possibly, obviously, from the financial reason. But it's like, hey, you know what? Do you have one or two other backup coaches that do what you do, but they have a different style? And it's like, I think that's the power of networks. It's like, you know what? I've turned people away as clients. I'm like, you know what? I might not be the right guy to help you with your branding. You and I aren't really clicking well, just already from a communication or from an email standpoint or whatever. I've had this happen with a couple of people recently, and I'm like, it's okay. I'm all right with it. I'm okay with walking away. Here's a couple other people that I know might do a good job for you that I'm willing to actually refer to you to. And there's so many people I know that don't do that.
Yeah. No, well, because it's this whole competition world. And instead, it's like, how do I help this person? When you take that focus off of you and put it on, how do I actually help this individual? It changes the whole dynamic.
Well, and I can tell you, one of those people sent me another client, because it said, hey, you know, Scott and I never ended up working together, but I really liked the fact that he helped me find somebody that actually I am clicking with. It didn't feel like the square peg in a round hole, and you should still go talk to him. So like, I literally had somebody contact me because of that process. Like, that person was still willing to refer me another client.
Oh, that's
just
so
because
cool.
There's that connection there. I was at least listening. So, and I'm not perfect at it, but that's something that I've learned from my mentors over the year. And if that helps you with what you're struggling and what you're trying to improve your goals, then great. Because sometimes we have to remember that there is square pegs going into round holes.
And too many times.
Hey man, we might want to back off a little bit and really revisit this and see, is it going to be worth our time? Or is it going to take too much time, and we should get them into somebody that's going to really help them faster?
Yep, I totally agree.
Yeah. But hey, we've been talking a while today. This is awesome. We're definitely going to have a follow-up episode. I'm picking up what you're throwing down, and I am definitely the weaker to you when it comes to financial success. So I commend you on what you've accomplished already. Since,
thank you so much.
You know, age is only a number. It's how you choose to live your life and how you choose to build yourself, and I think you're way ahead of the curve already.
Oh, thank you. I really do appreciate that.
So I love to close out our episodes with a final thought. So I don't like to tell people ahead of time, because then you get a chance to be all robotic and make something up. But you're the co-host of the day, so it's not about me, it's about you. So what is a message or a thought? It doesn't have to be a quote. It could be a message. So I think, and I like to kind of refer to it as an umbrella effect. But out of everything we talked about today, like, what is there a message that you're trying to get out there to the world? Whether it be your brand, whether it be through the Money Nerd thing, the WhitneyHansonCoaching.com, whatever it may be, like, what is a message that kind of is an umbrella over everything that you're really just trying to get out to the world or to people that choose to follow you, work with you, whatever?
The message that I would say in general that I try to share with people is that your financial life impacts your entire life. It's not just a piece of your life. It really is so intertwined. And the sooner you can figure out how to manage your money, and it doesn't have to be difficult, but the sooner you can figure out that process, the better your quality of life is going to be. So make sure you're prioritizing that and you're doing the research you need to make sure that you understand how your money works. That's pretty much it.
I love it.
That's the message.
That's a great message, because I'm guilty of it too. Listen up, guys. That was another Live the Fuel show. And I'm telling you, if you haven't checked her out yet, go to the show notes. If you're a website person on livethefuel.com, check her out. Whitney Hansen Coaching. You can Google it. You can just go for whitneyhansen.com. Go, if you want to check out her audio works, go check out the new Money Nerds podcast. I'll be listening to it this weekend. Lastly, Whitney, are you also everywhere besides the Google? Are you on, I know you're on Facebook. Are you on the Twitter? Are you on the Instagram?
I am on all of these. Instagram is probably where I hang out the most.
Cool.
Go figure, with Tony being my significant other.
Yeah.
So you can find me at Whitney_Hansen_co. Twitter, it's just at Whitney Hansen Co. And YouTube is another place where I hang out quite a bit. So you can watch some of my weird videos. You can laugh at me. You can learn something and just have a good time.
There we go, guys. So again, guys, that's another Live the Fuel show. I know for a fact, from a financial standpoint, we definitely gave you guys a lot of fuel today. So again, we're here to fuel your health, your business, your lifestyle. Definitely check out our websites. Check out our social media feeds. This girl's got a lot going on. Thanks for listening in today. We'll talk to you guys again soon. Keep living the fired up, epic life.
Thank you for listening to Live the Fuel. Visit us at livethefuel.com. Stay connected on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and more at Live the Fuel. Live the fired up, epic life. Hashtag Live the Fuel.